This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. It has just gone past 7:47 in the morning. It's Wednesday, the 6th of January. And although it's just been the third day of the new year, over the weekend we did see some headlines which were quite significant, and where it was announced that the high-speed rail project between Malaysia and Singapore had been cancelled. Now, details have slowly been revealed as to the reasons for the cancellation, with the minister in the Prime Minister's department, Dato' Sri Mustafa Mohamad, saying that the project had been derailed by COVID-19 because of its negative impact on the Malaysian economy. But then the Singapore Transport Minister Ong Ye Kung in Parliament said that Malaysia's proposal to remove the asset company was the main reason for its cancellation. Now, this asset co would have supplied the train system, operated the network, and been accountable to both countries. Now, questions of course arise over the quantum of compensation that the Malaysian government has to pay Singapore. So for a view on this issue, we have on the line with us Tricia Yeo, CEO for the Institute of Democracy and Economic Affairs. Good morning, Tricia, and a happy new year to you. Now, there seems to be mixed messaging in terms of the reason for the cancellation of the project. So what does this entire debacle say about transparency over mega projects in Malaysia, aside from the compensation that has to be paid?
Hi, good morning, Xiaoling, and a happy new year to BFM. Thanks for having me on. I think this is, you know, yet another indicator or a reminder to us and to policymakers that large public infrastructure projects really require a lot more careful planning and scrutiny. Of course, transparency in public interest, that goes without saying. I mean, we understand that there are some terms that cannot be disclosed. However, Minister Tok Pa has said that they're checking with Singapore whether they can actually review the cost of compensation, because this is for public interest. But, you know, kind of just speaking very generally for now, I think we have not paid enough attention to the large infrastructure projects in Malaysia. And, you know, the HSR is just one example. There are many examples that we can talk about. And, you know, there are international standards that we can actually adhere to. There is something called the COST, or COST, which is the Construction Sector Transparency Initiative. It's a global initiative improving transparency and accountability in public infrastructure. It basically sets an international standard of what government, industry, and civil society can do to promote what kinds of data within infrastructure projects should be disclosed, should be validated, and should be provided to the public. So I'm just saying at the very outset, there are standards that can be adhered to. And this is one such instance where a lot of public attention is now being paid to HSR. And I think questions do need to be raised as to not just the transparency, but also the processes that were involved in the decision-making. And I think while there's a lot of public demanding for transparency on the cost of compensation, I think we also need to ask for, you know, a more transparent process over the decision-making. And I mean, you have correctly pointed out that there's been a little bit of, you know, there are two sides that are being laid out over the last few days. There's the decision from the Singapore side about why this had not gone on, which is, as far as we can tell, the fact that the Malaysian government decided not to proceed with the appointment of this assets co, right? So a sort of separate company that would be appointed, because neither country has the expertise to lay out the link. And from the Malaysian side, it has said that, it has said, number one, that they did not want to have this guarantees that amount to 60 billion ringgit for 30 years. So that's, and the other second thing that they have disclosed is that Malaysia's proposed structure will save 30% of the total cost. While I think it's good that the Malaysian government has also been negotiating on our behalf, so I agree that perhaps, you know, those guarantees amounting to 60 billion for 30 years, that is quite a hefty obligation for us to be able to have to fulfill. However, you know, I think the Malaysian government has not yet divulged, for instance, what the alternative for the assets co would have been. Right. And yes, while the Malaysian government is saying that 30% of the total cost would have been saved from our proposed structure. I think it's not, for a project of this size and of this implication, I think it's not also about just saving money alone, but it's also about whether the project can function, right? It's about sustainability. It's about the overall value of the project. Can it achieve its high impact goals that it had intended to in the first place?
Yeah, and Tricia, you know, there is still talk that this HSR will proceed, but it will just be a link for KL and JB. Do you think this makes it a viable project and actually really generate the economic growth it's supposed to?
The entire purpose of the HSR was to link the capital of Malaysia with Singapore. And I think if the proposed project just goes up to Johor alone, this will probably bring benefits to Johor. I mean, I know that the Johor state government has expressed interest in continuing with it. And I think they will have some benefits and some economic benefits of people traveling, business people traveling between KL and Johor. But that's a completely separate objective, right? Like a completely separate economic goal and the kind of achievements that would have intended to have been achieved that the entire project in the first place set out to do. And you cannot imagine that the kinds of business people who were hoping very much for this HSR between KL and Singapore to happen would take, say, a HSR train to Johor, and then from Johor onwards still need to consider that the various options of getting into Singapore, and that's the whole reason of connecting to Singapore. So I think perhaps what benefits to Johorians and to the Johor state government, but not achieving the kinds of economic benefits in any way that was envisioned prior to this.
And another company, Prasarana Malaysia, is also facing some issues of its own with mixed messaging stemming from the suspension of its chief executive, issues over late payments and even alleged discrepancies in awarding contracts. Is there any way for the government and GLCs to maintain a higher level of transparency when it comes to its affairs?
Yeah, so I think on the Prasarana issue, I mean, this really is something that, again, our GLCs and any kind of government entity in general, that they need to have a policy on conflict of interest. So, you know, many countries do have this explicitly. So, for instance, you know, we have perhaps policies on anti-bribery and so on. But we need a policy on conflict of interest as well. Generally, if you want to talk about GLCs, first and foremost is that the OECD has very good standards of how state-owned enterprises should operate. And one of the main things it does say is that it recommends that we prevent political interference on the boards. And although a case, I think, can be made for some political oversight in the SOEs or GLCs with public service obligations, I think, in general, there's good practice to avoid board representation by the highest level of political power, including from within government and the legislature. And people link directly with the executive powers, so even heads of state and government, heads of governments and ministers, they should definitely not serve on boards. So that's the first primary principle that I think any government in Malaysia has not successfully subscribed to, and that is the root of the problem of GLCs, I believe, in Malaysia. I mean, the other main point, of course, and I think there are different contentions over this issue, and I think many people perhaps lie on different spectrum of this, is whether or not GLCs should be remaining within business. So if we can depoliticize business by also decentralizing the decision-making process, that would be ideal. So this is where the GLCs would be allowed to run a bit more independently. The need to decentralize decision-making in GLCs, I mean, it is risky to have things depend on the government of the day, and the government does potentially create hurdles by pushing the people down. So I think reducing ownership in GLCs, that would be ideal as well. The other thing to consider is whether or not government should guarantee the debt of GLCs. GLCs are ultimately supposed to be, or many of them, some of them perform a social obligation, and some of them set out to be commercial entities. So the question is, you know, should the government guarantee the debt of commercial entities when they're in fact supposed to be, you know, competing within the business field? And, you know, just having more check and balance mechanisms in governance, you know, we don't actually have any kind of scrutiny, or we don't have an oversight body over GLCs in Malaysia. And having not just oversight, but also a general plan as to what the government intends to do with GLCs in the long term, or the midterm to the long term, that would be really helpful as well.
There was Tricia Yeo, CEO of Institute of Democracy and Economic Affairs, reminding us once again the importance of independence of government-linked companies. And it's true, the role of the government is to create a viable environment for businesses, but not necessarily run it. We're about to head into the 8 a.m. news bulletin, and after that, we have the breakfast grill, where Lynn will be speaking with the Acting High Commissioner of South Africa to Malaysia. Stay tuned for that. That's happening in a few minutes. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.